A Victorian girl falls down a rabbit hole and finds herself in a world where cats disappear, leaving only their grins, babies turn into pigs, and time itself can be murdered. For over 150 years, Lewis Carroll's Alice has captivated minds far beyond the nursery. Einstein reportedly kept the book on his nightstand, finding inspiration in its playful approach to time and space. Neuroscientists have named a perception disorder after her. Musicians, philosophers, and physicists continue mining its depths for insight. Why does a children's story about talking rabbits and mad tea parties endure as serious intellectual currency? Perhaps because Carroll understood something profound. The best way to examine reality is to turn it upside down. Beneath the whimsy lies a masterclass in philosophy, exploring questions that have puzzled humanity for millennia. Who am I? What is real? How do we know anything at all? Carroll's genius was making these questions feel not like homework, but like adventure, inviting us to follow a curious girl who refuses to accept absurdity at face value, even when surrounded by it. G.K. Chesterton suggested Carroll's writing should be studied by philosophers to explore the borderland between reason and unreason, using curiosity as a component of sanity that allows readers to enjoy nonsense without truly worrying about Alice's fate in an insane world. When college students chose Alice as their favorite rebel, they recognized something crucial. This isn't a passive princess. She follows the white rabbit, never once considering how in the world she was to get out again, displaying radical independence. She rejects her sister's world of books without pictures or conversations, choosing instead to author her own adventure. What makes Alice revolutionary is her refusal to apologize for her mind. When the Duchess shames her, "You're thinking about something, my dear, and that makes you forget to talk," Alice stands firm. "I've a right to think." Told there's no room at the Mad Hatter's tea party, she doesn't retreat but declares, "There's plenty of room," and sits down anyway. This isn't rudeness. It's a young woman refusing to let others define her boundaries. Carol's treatment of motherhood is equally radical. When the Duchess abandons her violently shaken baby, Alice rescues the child but shows no maternal instinct. When it transforms into a pig, she set the little creature down and felt quite relieved to see it trot away, subversive for a Victorian audience viewing motherhood as woman's highest calling. Alice's final triumph comes at the knave's trial, where she grows to full size and declares the truth everyone fears: "You're nothing but a pack of cards." Nice girls don't make history, and Alice is anything but nice. The White Queen offers Alice jam every other day. Jam yesterday and jam tomorrow, but never jam today. This captures how we experience life, cherishing the past and anticipating the future while finding the present mundane. Ask parents about raising children, and they'll wax poetic. Catch them mid-tantrum, and you'll find exhaustion. Philosopher Elijah Milgram calls these jam yesterday, jam tomorrow goods, experiences whose daily reality feels neutral or negative, yet form a whole we remember or anticipate as positive. This explains procrastination. When rewards exist only in distant past or future, motivation withers in the present. The solution? Create artificial jam-today experiences, like college graduations, that provide visible goals for students grinding through mundane coursework. Alice's rational mind constantly battles Wonderland's nonsense. While she adapts to strange physics, mastering mushroom-induced size changes, walking backward to move forward, she's frustrated by illogical thinking. Contrary to Jefferson Airplane's claim, logic thrives in Wonderland. Proportion is what's dead. The creatures weaponize logic to justify arbitrary conclusions. Humpty Dumpty declares, "Words mean whatever he chooses. The question is, which is to be master? That's all." Nuclear strategists operate in a world where contradictions are features, not flaws. Their language, nuke speak, sanitizes horror. Bombs become devices, cities become targets. Their central paradox: to reduce nuclear war risk, the risk must be increased. Edward Luttwak celebrates being freed from the false disciplines of consistency and coherence. They play deadly games with names like Delicate Balance of Terror and Russian Roulette, the latter nearly ending civilization during the Cuban Missile Crisis. When the Soviet Union collapsed, strategists filled the enemy gap with new villains, Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, Mohammed Ahmadinejad, always with Hitler's shadow justifying ever greater arsenals. Absurdity peaks with civil defense plans suggesting survival at ground zero by swimming underwater. Unlike Alice escaping Wonderland, we remain trapped as expendable pawns, where Herman Kahn, the real Dr. Strangelove, suggests that even if 300 million died, a power with strategic superiority might still win. Alice escapes Wonderland by growing more than a mile high and declaring, "You're nothing but a pack of cards." Her rejection is philosophically justified. She never agreed to Wonderland's rules. A social contract is an implicit agreement to obey laws, typically offering three options: leave, change the laws, or implicitly consent by staying. Alice had none of these. She wasn't born there, wasn't raised there, and was actively trying to leave. Compare this to Socrates, who at 70 faced execution for impiety and corrupting youth. Though he could have escaped, he accepted his fate, arguing in Plato's Credo that by never leaving Athens, he had implicitly agreed to obey its laws, even unto death. The Queen of Hearts embodies Thomas Hobbes's political philosophy, a ruthless monarch terrorizing citizens into obedience. Her "off with their heads" establishes law through terror, reflecting Hobbes's belief that those outside society's protection face a solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short existence. John Locke offered an alternative. Legitimate government must be limited, rule with consent, and protect inalienable rights. The Hearts Court isn't Locke's check against power, but Hobbes's reign of terror. When the Queen demands sentence first, verdict afterwards, Alice's rejection is entirely justified. She stands outside their social contract with every right to defend herself. Alice's size changes prompt her to question her identity, exploring whether reality exists independently of perception. Most of us, like Alice and Carol, are realists. We believe the world exists regardless of our awareness. Yet Carol challenges this certainty. When Tweedledum and Tweedledee tell Alice she's merely a sort of thing in the Red King's dream, they question her very existence. Her tearful protest, "If I wasn't real, I shouldn't be able to cry," highlights the blurred line between perception and reality. How do we know we're not the dream? The idea that altered perceptions might reveal truer reality is counterintuitive yet compelling. Our normal perceptions already capture only narrow bands of light and sound. Some philosophers argue certain drugs disable the brain's filters, revealing reality as it truly is. Aldous Huxley claimed mescaline let him experience naked existence. William James, after nitrous oxide experiments, concluded normal consciousness is but one special type among many. Carol's work so effectively presents these dilemmas that it inspired the term Alice in Wonderland syndrome, temporary distortions in perception, time, and body image, often linked to migraines or psychoactive drugs. In a world where logic becomes weaponized, we need Alice's curious sanity. Nonsense turns dangerous when no one maintains goodness amid absurdity, as in Kafka's The Trial, where senseless strife renders life meaningless. Alice remains curious, sensible, and sane throughout, the perfect foil to expose Wonderland's absurdities. Her intellectual virtues shine: boundless curiosity, willingness to discard disproven assumptions, unwavering faith that reality yields to reason. The lament at the end of Through the Looking Glass implies growing up means leaving Wonderland behind. But must it? Alice's greatest lesson? Question everything. Trust your reason. Refuse absurdity just because everyone else accepts it. When faced with cards demanding obedience, have courage to grow tall and speak truth. Carol's genius wasn't just creating fantasy, it was using nonsense to sharpen our sense of sanity, making profound questions feel like adventure, showing us that courage to question everything is the foundation of both philosophy and freedom.